when you start to give people, it's so funny how the world works and how certain things start to work out for you. But the act of just giving alone makes you happy because it's fulfilling physiological needs.
Welcome to episode 92 of the Neuro Experience podcast. I'm Louisa Nicola. I am your host. Today, I'm in beautiful Los Angeles, sitting here with Heba Ali, who we're about to get into this incredible podcast. We're at Quest headquarters. Now, I'm going to give you a quick 5-minute rundown on who Heba is. So when she comes in here, she can just deliver the hardcore content that I know every single person is after. This woman has inspired me. I loved our chat, and I know it's going to just inspire each and every one of you in various different ways. So let's begin. Heba Ali, she's Jordanian, born in Jordan. She has a twin sister. She came to the States at age 2 with her mother, a single mother who was raising 6 kids. Heba Ali started working at the age of 13. Now, she says that she learns everything in life from her mother. That's where she got her grit and resiliency from. She learned how to be a strong woman. Her mother adapted to a new country with little to no education and had to bring up a family of 6 by herself. So I can only imagine how hard that was. And for Heba to see that, she grew from that and she learned everything from her mother. Her fitness journey started at age 17. It started late because of her Middle Eastern background. It prevented her from actually being able to participate in sports. However, when she did start, she was very unconditioned and she wanted to make a point of that. She wasn't a natural born athlete. She was the worst runner on the track and field team. And she had to learn everything from scratch. And she put so much hard work, time, and effort into building her body and her fitness. Heba was battling insecurity and anxiety, and as a way of breaking through that, she joined the track team, and while she was doing that, she studied for NASM and became a 800-meter runner competing at a national level. Heba embodies resiliency, mental performance, and what it means to beat the odds in a demanding fitness world. I'm so excited and honored to have her as a guest.
Yeah, but I completely turned the tables for myself. Yeah. And so this realization of like, wow, if this wasn't because of my body, this was because of my mind. Like if I didn't mentally endure everything and reframe my outlook on every given situation, like I could have told myself, walk away, like this isn't for you after coming in last place 20 times. Mm. Like, no, this is part of the process. You're going to get there. And so I wanted to take what I learned and help people who were in the situation as I was that were overlooked. Mm. Like that. I had this potential inside of me that nobody saw. Mm. I brought it outside of myself. Not everyone could do that. So instead of going, accepting a scholarship to run track in college, I opened up my company. And actually, no, I did personal training at a gym for a year. Didn't like the corporation rules. Again, I'm just not good with authority when it doesn't follow ethical like principles in business. So opened up Evolve Nation. And ever since then, I've been traveling, teaching seminars, advocating physical health and mental health and how they really are intertwined. Like you can't, and I always tell people, like, if you had to pick one or the other, pick emotional health, because you can be physically in shape.
Yes.
Like I have been shredded. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like this year is probably the best shape of my life where I've, like, people are like, you are so shredded. And it's just like, it's been the most emotionally unstable time of my life because I haven't been catering emotions, and I've been living such a fast-paced life, running my business, helping people. I came in like 3rd place and I didn't even know it. I thought I was living healthy. Mm. And so when you slow down and you actually observe what's going on and what you're feeling, all of that comes out, all that discomfort of, oh my God, I got a lot of inner work to do. Mm. And it's so like, eat your salads, be shredded. But if you're not working on your emotional health, you're not healthy.
When you say emotional health, do you also mean your mental health? Because I know
they're intertwined. They're a tag team.
it's interesting because when I was, I would say it's been 2 years now, I was going through, I was going through a really bad stage in my life. I was moving out of the country. I was starting, you know, my business was starting to take off, but there was still nothing that was, there was something missing. You know, when you really listen to yourself. So I took it upon myself to do a really challenging thing. I went on a 10-day silent retreat in the mountains in Australia before I came here. At day 4, I thought honestly I was going to die. And I think that was the most mentally tough experience of my life.
Wait, tell me more.
Yeah, it's a silent retreat. All you do is you can't talk and you meditate for literally almost 8 hours a day. You have to get up at 4 a.m. You eat only vegan food, and you only get to eat twice a day. So things come out of you that you don't even think are possible. When you're not having your caffeine, when you're not talking to another human for 10 days.
You also have the mental ability to adapt and survive. And so without the caffeine, without the routine we built, the amount of discomfort that comes, but we can bounce back so fast. Like 3 days after that, I'm cool now. I could fast 18 hours, no food, no water.
But it's those first initial days. That's why I said day four, I thought, I'm going to die on these mountains. Like it was really tough.
Wow.
Now I want to ask, you told us about your journey. Now, Evolve Nation, what is that? Basically, I want to know, like, how do you make money? Are you a personal trainer? Like, what's the business?
So the business has services that does both online training, consulting, and seminars. I've expanded my seminars globally into Egypt and the Middle East. I haven't really gone anywhere else. But I think that the direction it's going to continue to take, it'll always have the online services for the training and consulting. But doing a tour is definitely something I want to invest in. By the way, let me just rewind a little bit. The sponsorships that come with Evolve Nation, meaning like brands I align myself with, whether that be supplement, lifestyle, holistic brands, all of that, I actually like dropped all of it.
Really?
Yeah. I think that I need to focus on really honing down what my most powerful and effective strategy is going to be with transforming lives. And it's like when you give a little bit here and like you give a little bit of your energy here, 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 you have so much less for yours. Mm. And so like I've learned to like really prioritize my baby, and that's obviously a trade-off, but it's worth the trade-off for me. It's like shutting down all the distractions, even if I believe in them. Like, hey, if a brand deal here or there, yeah, okay. But sponsorships are just very time-consuming, and they take your energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you take the two most valuable things, your time and your energy, and you put them into one thing, it could flourish so much more. So I kind of geared off your question. But
no, I love that.
It's like it's a training company, but it's going to continue to incorporate more mental training. But I want to do that in person though. Mm. Like, because I know, like, psychology isn't cool to people, right? You tell them like, hey, let me teach you. It's just like, yeah. No. But like when I talk to people, they're like, wow, that's really interesting. I'm like, that's psychology. And they're like, oh. So I feel like I want to give people the experience, the fun experience of learning with a group, like retreats, seminars, maybe a running tour, like unleashing their potential without even knowing. Because you know when you're with a group of people, they push you, it becomes enjoyable, and the cycle just keeps running itself until you can do it on your own. But yeah, so I want to be more hands-on with people.
I love that. I'll be the first one to come onto your running tour.
yes
I'll do
so,
it
yeah so I'm gonna be able to run hopefully in a couple of weeks.
You had a knee surgery.
Yeah, I did prolotherapy, I did bone marrow aspiration, and PRP. The bone marrow aspiration was so painful. So for anyone who doesn't know what that is, they basically, I was awake, they drill your hips, both sides, and then they take a needle, like this big, and it goes all the way in, and they pull the bone marrow out of your bone. And it is the most painful thing. It's like taking this wall, trying to suck any water out of it.
Why did you get that done?
Because your bone marrow has healing stem cells, so they take the good stem cells and they spin it and they inject it into your knee so that it has more healing cells. Mm. And then they take your plasma-rich platelets, pull your blood, spin it, take the red blood cells, inject it in your knee, and it promotes like faster healing. So basically,
blood doping.
Yeah, I did what most NFL players do, who like you're basically buying time.
Yeah,
like I want to be back in the game. I don't want to be like the summer is important to me. I'm gonna be in Egypt. I want to live my life.
Mm.
It's like the people who wear contacts or glasses and they have LASIKs. Yeah. So like, wow, I haven't been seeing my whole life.
Yeah.
So I really value my health. I'll do anything. I'll spend anything so I can be healthy physically.
That's why I love getting into your story. I was inspired by you because I'm inspired by Middle East, and I was, my family's from Cyprus. Technically, yes, Greek Cypriot, but we're actually very close to Lebanon in the Middle East there. Mm-hmm. And I want to know a bit about, your background, your history, and how that's influenced the woman you are today when it comes to fitness? Because let's be honest, I'm really interested in knowing how you went from Heba, this, you know, girl, six children, working at the age of 13 to internet sensation. You've taken off on Instagram and all other platforms.
It wasn't pretty at all. So coming from the Middle Eastern descent and conservative, religious, like, I don't even think this only ties down to the Middle East. Like, every culture, like, in your bubble, your family talks, right? If it doesn't follow cultural norms, it's, like, shunned on. Like, whatever your cultural norms are, like, you have to live up to it, or, like, you're shunned, and then you feel bad about yourself. But this has been really interesting for me, because I had to rewire the way I saw this situation, and it's why I was able to thrive. Most people can't thrive. Because, like, a woman being a personal trainer is, like, so weird. Like, you're taking on a guy's job. You're wearing, like, you know, revealing skin clothes. Like, it was just very not normal. So, me doing this, I obviously didn't have my mother's, like, not consent, but support.
Yeah.
Like, I knew she wasn't happy with what I was doing. And that makes you feel really poorly. Like, when you love family and you work to support them, and what you're doing, what you love, is incongruent with what they like, you're like, wow, they think that I'm not good. Like, I'm the purple elephant in the family. Everyone's in medical school. I'm pursuing something I love, and I'm the purple elephant, and I'm being disrespectful, and my mom thinks that, whatever, I'm not going to be successful. There's so many things that attack your own character and how you feel, and it stops people from going.
Yeah.
So I had to understand, took years, that I'm going to keep going, but my mom loves me. And her harsh feedback isn't because she doesn't want me to succeed. It's because she has her own beliefs, her cultural norms. My mom's 60 years old. You think you and your mom are going to think the same? Like, there's going to be crashing ideas and beliefs, and that's normal. Like, we live in a modern world. She has her roots. So I've just learned to understand and respect that and be as respectful as I can while I continue my journey.
Do you think a lot of people who have Middle Eastern, European, don't do what they should be, you know, what they really want to do because of cultural norms?
100%.
Yeah.
I had this girl fly out just to talk to me from San Francisco. And she was Middle Eastern. She was telling me, like, Heba, if there's anyone on earth that knows what I'm going through, I'm sure it's you. Like, I really want to pursue this, but it's so hard. Like, I have my cousins talking badly about me to my mom, and this and that. And, like, you try to hide your career from your family, but it comes around. And it just, you're not really living a life. You're hiding, but you're trying to live, you're trying to be something that you truly are, but it goes against your culture. So, like, now you create a box that you have to live inside of. My identity has to live in this box of cultural norms. I can't be anything more than this, or else my family won't love me. And we all know that we all want to be loved. Like, we live to be loved. And so I think it definitely, for minorities, definitely hinders them from, like, chasing what they want to do. Because social support and sense of belonging are the two things that drive us. And without that, we almost feel like it's meaningless. Well, what's the point?
Exactly.
But just reframe your perception on it the same way I did. I have a very strong relationship with my mom. And even though she still is, like,
doesn't understand.
She still doesn't. I used to take it so personal. I used to be like, why can't you just understand me? Why can't you just love me for who I am? It's like, she does. My mom does love me. She just has her beliefs. Like, and she can. Like, we are our own individuals. We have our own beliefs. Respect each other. Don't take it personal. And just always have an optimistic outlook on what the other person is feeling towards you.
At least your sister's doing the same thing. And it's not too much of a...
Yeah, it's not too much of a deviation, right? It's like for medical school. Deviation.
Yeah.
But no, the thing was, I actually was really passionate about radiology and being an orthopedic. Since I was younger, I always wanted, like, male-dominant fields. It's like, I'm going to be an orthopedic, I'm going to break bones. And I learned you have to actually throw your weight in bars. I want to do that. But once I shadowed them and I saw what their life was like, it was just not a life I wanted for myself. 9 hours in a cubicle. I'm just too much of an extrovert, too much of a sensation seeker to actually, like, be following such a redundant routine on a day-to-day.
Speaking of sensation seek, I've been loving your videos, especially the ones at the pyramids where you're out there with a tire, I don't know, or a rope or something. I'm like, who is this girl? She's unbelievable. How did you start to evolve, you know, your social media? Like, you started somewhere, you may have put a photo out. Did anything really spiral it, or was it just organic?
Everything was organic and spiked. So I feel like it has to be organic for it sometimes to spike in the way that, like, it is your breakthrough. I actually went on social media with no intention of being a, like, social media star, influencer. I hate the word influencer. Like, it really, I find it insulting.
I hate that word.
I hate it so much.
Anybody out there who says they're an influencer, I just want to know, what are you influencing? I don't get it.
I like to say, like, I'm online to have an influence, but I'm an influencer. Like, I don't know, the word is just very fabricated and it just sounds like shit to me. Like, and when people ask me, what do you do? Like, I don't even like thoughtful leader. I don't like transformational coach. I don't like anything. I do, you know what I do? Coach. I help people improve their physical and mental health. There's no title. I don't want one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the title annoys me. Okay, we're going back. What was the question?
So getting on
social media.
Yeah.
This was about 2014 when Instagram was up and all you saw online was the butt programs, bullshit teas. And I studied NASM and I was like, something's not right here. Like, I bought all of their programs.
Yeah.
They were all the same. I was like, but this isn't right. Like, this isn't right. This is all a scam. Like, all this is a scam. I bet you these people aren't even training their coaches. Aren't training their clients. And not only that, I became super, super obsessed with studying the market and advertising and the misleading food labels and everything. I became so exposed to that at such a young age that I was like, wow, this world is crappy. Mm. Like, this is messed up. Like, you're playing with a human's personal health. Like, this is a problem because it's not only that you're messing up the country's health, but humanity. When you can trade off a dollar amount for someone's health, that's so unethical and so inhumane. Like, that bothered me on the low. So I got online so I could be that one person that people can find legitimate resources to. Like, you want to improve your life? Here's some workouts. Here's nutrition tips. Here's some lifestyle tips. I wanted to be that legitimate source that I found social media lacked. And I was also very different in the sense that I didn't follow very structured bicep curls and squats. And I just used what I had. And I wanted people to know that, like, you don't have to have a gym membership. You don't have to follow what all these fitness models are doing. My viral videos were the ones of me training outside. And my first one was when I used a swing and I started, it actually went viral. Everyone was doing it. I jumped over a swing. I did a burpee. And then I jumped over the swing and I did a burpee. That started a trend.
Yeah.
And so that was my first video that went viral. But yeah, I just always use nature. And I think that made me stand out a lot. And it's honestly a strong, like, a very important message for people to take.
Mm.
Be different.
Mm.
And when I say, like, be different, like, it's not just like because it's cool or it sounds cliche. When you stand out in a room of people who are all the same, it's going to sometimes be your breakthrough.
Mm.
Like, how do you expect to be noticed? How do you expect something great to happen if you're just conforming to everyone else in the room? You're just going to be like them.
But not a lot of people have the confidence. And we were talking about this earlier. They're fearing something. They're fearing being different. They're fearing the judgment of others. They're fearing, oh, if I put this out and it doesn't work, what's everyone going to say? And so many things go through somebody's head. So I can only imagine, you know, and you had no fear. You just jumped into it. You just put it out there because you had no expectation.
Yeah. When you don't have an expectation, there is no fear.
Yeah.
But fear definitely comes with the job.
Mm.
And I think it's really important for people to know why they are on social media. Whether you're on there for, you're seeking motivation or you're on there to provide an influence for people. Really understand what your role is.
Yes.
It's so important to know what your role is. People are just online, like, so, like, oh, I'm just here. And you don't understand what's subconsciously happening to your body. You don't know what you're programming for your body to do and think. Like, say you're feeling really good on your phone, or you feel really sad and you grab your phone, you go on your phone and you distract whatever upset you. You just create a maladaptive behavior. Mm. So every time you're stressed, your cell phone is the cure, rather than a real human being talking to someone. figuring out what that problem was that you just avoided and went on yourself. And there's people are so subconsciously like unaware of all of this. We live in a fast paced life. Like, how do you expect yourself to catch everything, right? So know your role online, and then every decision you make online needs to be aligned with that role's values. Do you know what I mean?
I love the fact that you don't follow many people on social media. And for me, I follow, I'm very cautious of what I'm watching. I don't watch a lot of stories on there, mainly because I don't have a lot of time, but also because I'm very careful of what goes into my brain, because your brain doesn't really know the difference between what's real and what's not. So then if you're watching somebody's story over and over, you're going to end up wanting subconsciously to kind of be like them. And it's interesting, if you're watching somebody, maybe a famous rapper or something, they're always maybe smoking up, drinking, they're in the clubs, you're going to start to think subconsciously, that's what I should be doing. Why aren't I doing that? Then you find yourself wanting to seek that, going out a bit more, and it starts from somewhere.
Do you know what that's known as?
What?
Informational conformity.
Informational conformity. Can you
elaborate? So this is like an indirect form of influence. And it happens through trends. Like, you see your favorite icons with a new hairstyle, new clothes, and you're not realizing that what you just said, the subconscious cues that you're picking up is like, should I be doing that?
Yeah.
And you're using them as a valuable source of information of what you should be doing. And this happens on social media especially, because if you idolize this person, you idolize their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you want to be as close to that as you can, because you really love them and their lifestyle. So it's really interesting that you say that, because it happens a lot. It goes into informational normative is what we all do. Like, we'll do it right now. If there's so many studies, it's basically not stepping outside of society's norms, right? So this isn't a matter of like what we think we need to do in order for us to either be loved or avoid being ostracized. So say we're in this room, right? And all of us, him and I, we just like look there. You're going to look there.
Yeah.
Right?
So I want to know what's going on.
Yeah, there was an elevator experiment where like everyone went in the elevator and they faced the opposite way of the door. And they had one person come in that wasn't part of the study. That person turned the opposite way. Like, think about how silly that is to be standing the opposite way of the door that's opening. But you're doing what everyone's doing because you don't want to be left out. Mm. So normative is like the more direct and powerful one that we see happening on a day-to-day.
But I think it also comes down to the fact that not a lot of people are spending time, like we said, getting to know who they are. So therefore, we don't know who we are. We don't really want to spend the time to do it because it's scary. It's uncomfortable. The brain always wants to go back to, you know, what's pleasure comfortable, state. Okay? Yeah. Pleasure and pain. And we know that the comfort state is in that suffering. We dwell. We want to keep dwelling. Like, I always think, like, why do you keep bringing up the past? Why? It's because it's easy. It's comfortable for us to not bring up the past and really, you know, change our state, which can happen in a moment. It takes effort. Mm-hmm. And when I say effort, I'm not talking action-orientated effort. I'm talking mental effort. And that's scary to some people. And it's hard. So it's like, well, I don't really know who I am. I don't know what I like. Don't know what my fashion is yet. I don't know what I should be. So I'm just going to follow this girl. And then out of nowhere, you're like, I love her face. I love her. She's gone and gotten lip injections. She got Botox. I'm going to get that. I'm going to get my hair like that.
Wait, I don't want to cut you off, but you bring up an interesting point, right? I don't know what I like, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Now, when somebody does something and they like it, a lot of times it's not because of their subjective feelings that they like it. They like it because of the feedback they got from other people.
Yeah.
So like, think about yourself. Like, probably what you like about yourself is what you're most complimented on, right? Mm-hmm. So people have an idea of who they are based off of other people, not themselves.
Mm.
What this person says to you is, hey, you have really nice blue eyes. Starts to really like your blue eyes. You get complimented all the time. You dye your hair blonde. You get a lot of compliments. Oh, I like blonde. It fits me. I'm going to keep the blonde. And so we make these judgments on ourselves based off of the external world and their justifications, what looks good on us, rather than us creating it for ourselves. And so it's important to be aware of this. Like, use internal justification for all your decisions. I stopped getting my nails done, stopped doing the eyelash extensions of where I was sitting there for 3 hours and they were plugging it in.
I can't think of anything
I stopped all of this. And I realized that I don't want to spend 2 hours of my day in a salon.
Mm.
For what?
Mm.
Like, literally, if you really think about it, if if it's something you don't value and you're just doing it, you're conforming for the wrong reason, not even the good reason. But if you, if it serves you a good purpose and you like it for yourself, by all means do it. Just be more aware of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to a girlfriend of mine, and we were discussing why you let the opinions of others really affect and shape who you are. And I've always been different in the way that I dress, I look, and it's just been like that my whole life, okay? I was born and raised in Australia, but my family were born and raised in Cyprus. So when we came to Australia, I looked different. I was amongst a school of all blonde hair and blue eyes. So I was asking her, like, why do you, you know, she's like, did you hear so-and-so loved my jacket and they love my shirt and they think, you know, exactly what you just said. And I think, okay, that's great, but do you love it? And you're right. She actually responded, well, everyone else likes it. So yeah, I guess it suits me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary.
Isn't it funny?
Because then you can change your entire life based around everybody else.
Exactly. And that's why conforming is good but bad. If you don't have a sense of self, you know, if you don't have your self-identity, you're unaware of who you are, and you're conforming to all these things, it becomes your identity. It becomes who you are.
Exactly.
So you need to be really careful. And I know it can sound really overwhelming, and people are like, oh my God, where do I start? But it just... start with more self-awareness, like your day-to-day habits, who's around you. Like you said, who are your five closest friends? I've always spoken to people much older because I love their wisdom. Like, there's this theory, evolved theory, that we only listen to people closer to our age. And it's kind of true. Like, if you look at a 15-year-old, they hardly ever listen to a 6-year-old. I was the 15-year-old that wanted to listen to that 6-year-old.
Yeah.
That life wisdom, you can't be taught it in school. You cannot be taught it through anything, but people who later on in their lives, they look back and wish they had the control to analyze their life and make certain changes. So don't wait for it to be too late.
But a lot of people ask me as well, like, how do I know I'm on the right path, or how can I start to do this? And you said self-awareness. I say always reach for better feeling thoughts. Always reach for something that feels good. So if you're in a relationship, and that's not just romantic, it could be business or friendship. If that person doesn't really, if you don't feel good, and it's not, it shouldn't be about the other person, okay? It's not like she doesn't make me feel, it's like, do you feel good in their presence? If the answer is no, for whatever reason, just do something else. And that may be, just don't see that person again. It's mind-boggling to see how many people are actually involved in friendships and in business with people and organizations that actually don't make them feel good. So then they're going through life 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day, not feeling good. And maybe when they go home, they feel good and they've accepted that.
Yeah. I'm analyzing this in two ways because I'm playing devil's advocate. So in one sense, I agree with you.
Yeah.
If the people you're with, especially your spouse, because your family is your family. Like, you don't deviate from your family because you're going to clash heads and all that stuff. That's normal. But if your spouse doesn't make you feel beautiful, confident, or in general, if you don't feel like your truest self, and even if you don't know who that is, if you don't feel comfortable with who you are in that present moment around this person, they cannot be in your life. Like, that's unless something's changed. Because that's how you really determine what people are making you uncomfortable for growth and which ones are making you uncomfortable because they're not supporting who you are. There's a difference. Like, I have some friends that they a lot of times, like, make me, I don't always feel good around them, but they're real with me. They tell me what I a lot of times don't want to hear. And there's a lot of growth that comes out of that type of feedback. So don't only surround yourself around people who give you positive feedback and make you feel good all the time. You want that negative feedback. You want that criticism. That's where your growth is going to come out. So just learn how to differentiate the two. Like, is this person making me feel uncomfortable because this information is going to help me? Or are they making me feel uncomfortable because they're making me feel insecure with who I am right now? Like, that, there's a difference.
So in your, you know, in your phase of bringing Evolve Nation, like evolving Evolve Nation, have you gone through any, you know, challenges mentally and emotionally? I know you've probably gone through some shit before, but is there anything that you can share? Because what I see now, you know, after getting to know you, the short moment, like we got to speak this morning, I can feel like you've got this, you know, this no bullshit, you know, exterior. And I'm like, where it comes from somewhere. Like, I always say that when you've come from either a tough environment or you've gone through something emotionally or, you know, mentally, it shapes the
It definitely shapes you. Yeah. I'm going to tie back to my childhood because it always goes back to your childhood. But I think that when you spend a lot of time surviving.
You mean financially?
No, just surviving in life.
Just surviving in life.
I mean, it's not only financially, but emotionally, right? Like, I grew up in a situation where my mom always had everything taken care of, but it wasn't always pretty, right? Like, she got us everything we wanted, but I knew, like, she was struggling. Like, I knew she was struggling to get food on the table at times, and she would never say it. So I think watching her and molding myself into knowing that if I don't make a change and contribute to helping, no one's going to do it for me. Like, I had a very soldier-like mindset of become responsible for your life, start executing, and don't victimize, because you're not only going to cost yourself a better life, but you're going to cost the people around you a better life. Like, I was more concerned with how can I help my family, right? And I have that same type of mentality now. It's everything I do is not for me. So, like, I take what I do seriously because I've invested so much into it, but also because I believe people themselves need to take it seriously, right? Like, all of that feel good, like all these memes online, people really don't even know what these memes.
Yeah.
I've discovered that the look good, feel good is one of the biggest scams on the market.
Why?
Because that look good, feel good meme, it's like, telling people, they're molding their perception that if I look good, I'm going to feel good. No, it's actually the opposite. It's the opposite. Like, I've hit so many aesthetic goals, they've done nothing for me, right? Like, you get the compliments, but deep down, if you're really upset or unhappy with an area in your life, that doesn't vanish. Your new 12-pack doesn't erase that. And so don't give people the conception, the perception that looking good is going to feel good.
Automatically.
Yeah. That's what gets people in the door at the gym. I want people to say, I'm going to the gym because I care about myself and I'm rewarding myself. Not, I'm going to the gym, this is a punishment because I don't like my body, but I can't wait till I have a nice body. Like, this is the type of mindset a lot of people have. Like, they go to the gym as a chore, right? They only start liking it when they see results. You just like it from the beginning. Like, you're doing something really good for your body internally and physically. And I like to look at fitness as a tool of character building, right? Like, you're conditioning your mind not only to not give up in the gym during your training or fitness journey, but this mind will not give up in other areas in your life, right? You condition the mind as a whole. It's not going to just be like, hey, it's fitness, I'm going to give up. Hey, I'm going to give up on my career goal and my boss wants me to do this. No, I feel like slacking. No, when you teach yourself to not slack in the gym, that transfers in your life.
But do you think it comes down to education? Like, a lot of people just don't know what to do, and I don't know what your where you stand in the lines of cardio versus weights, you know, well, that's if we get really into fitness and stuff. But, like, what about if a lot of people, mainly women, go into the gym and they're just like, okay, well, I don't know what to do, I'll just walk. And just, you know, it's like, it's mundane, it's boring, they don't see results from it, they really don't know what to do. And then they're scared that if I do weights, I'm going to get big, but then I want to do weights and I don't know how to do it. So do you think it all comes down to lack of education as well?
I think lack of education is one of the biggest issues with being prepared, right? So, like, we fear things because we're not prepared, right?
Yeah.
If you're not prepared for something, you wouldn't go into an exam not studying, right? People just walk in and they expect things to happen.
Yeah.
But I have two very different approaches with fitness. One, you don't really need much knowledge if you're going in there like as a therapeutic thing. Go on the treadmill. Love that treadmill. That's your alone time. It's your time to do something for yourself, whether it's a 50-minute badass workout or it's a 30-minute slow walk. Either way, you did something for yourself and you created movement. Be happy of that. Be happy with that. So your perception can change your workouts, whether they're basic or they're not. Like, they're all useful. My second approach is, if you want a long, life-lasting health shift, like, you want to really live a healthy life, you have to educate yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you would have never had the career you had. You would have never had, like, even cars. Like, you don't go buying a car without studying the specs of it, right? So understand what you're putting into your body, what you're training and why, and choose what you want. Like, people are following trends, the thick thighs save lives,
yeah,
the thigh gap, all this stuff. Like, and the problem is, trends are changing so much, people's goals are changing so much.
Yeah.
So when you can't focus on one goal for a long enough time to execute on it, why do you think that you never achieve it? You want it to be thick during September, and then April came around, and now you want a thigh gap. Pick one. Focus.
I don't think it comes down to, for me, I've got a different perspective on education, because I think we're living in a day and age where you don't need to go to an institution. Everything is available for free. So it's not a lack of education. It's a lack of focus, and it's a lack of understanding what you want. And that comes down to what we've been saying this entire time, knowing yourself and, you know, setting it to fire, not looking at Instagram saying, you know, she's doing that, I want to do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if there is something to take away from this whole podcast speech discussion,
experience,
it's to be more self-aware.
Yeah.
To be rooted in the sense that even if your values and your beliefs and who you are doesn't align with the people around you or society, don't let it mold you. Don't conform to it just because it feels good, right? Like, stand strong amongst it. Stay rooted in what you believe, because you're going to continue to blossom in your best way. And I think the third thing is to, I think with the self-awareness, would you say, what is the first step to self-awareness if someone wanted to start?
If they wanted to become more self-aware, observing how they feel.
There you go.
That's all I say.
So it doesn't say, as humans, we learn through observation. Yeah. So just start observing everything in your life and start caring for yourself like as if you were your own baby.
But then what's self-awareness?
Self-awareness is just gathering the attention.
Just understanding who you are in all aspects. You know, you've got actually my best friend, she came from Australia, visited me, and she was talking about, like, you have to go through a lot of things in every area of life. You know, your food habits, your fitness, family, friends. You have to go through a lot of things to really know who you are and what you like. So then you can walk away from the things that don't make you feel good. You know, you can. So when I was a triathlete, we were never allowed to drink. Okay, so I missed that. You know, growing up in my early 20s and late teens, I never got into drinking, okay, and partying, because we just weren't allowed to do it. So now I don't drink now, not because of, oh, it's bad for you, none of that. My body just doesn't like it. It doesn't accept it. So I know that, you know, if someone said, hey, we're going to go out and have some drinks, and, you know, it's like, well, it doesn't make, like, I don't know if I really want to be in that, right? Because it just doesn't, it's not me. But you have to go through, you know, a lot to actually be
saying no.
To say no. Because, but for me, it's very easy, because I'm like, I know myself, I don't want to go to this restaurant, or I don't want to go to this. I understand everyone's going to this party this weekend. I don't like that, it doesn't make me feel good. So you have to go through that to understand it. But it's funny when you see a lot of people, they're like, I'm going to this, I don't know, there's a concert on this weekend, or even Coachella, I'm going. Oh, why? When you said you've got so many things that you need to do for work. Oh, it's fun, you know, I don't want to get FOMO. Everyone's going to be there. Cardi B's going to be there. It's like, okay, cool. So it's, I don't know whether people are still going through their growth stages or they're still trying to figure out who they are. But I think that's just, you know, another phase of understanding self-awareness.
Yeah. I mean, I look at self-awareness as just taking attention and bringing it back to yourself. Right? Our attention is like in the external world. We're looking at everything in the external because by nature we learn through observation, social learning. And so it's a matter of slowing down the pace so that you can grasp that attention and put it towards how you feel and what you're thinking. And if you don't take that attention and concentrate it, how will you know what you feel?
So how do you now bypass negative comments? Because I'm sure, you know, I don't even know, but I'm sure you get some along the way somewhere. I'm sure you get, you know, when it comes to social media, I'm sure you get people who shoot out negative things at you. Not even that, who put their opinions on you, like, oh, hey, Heba, I don't know if you should be doing that, or I don't know. Like, how do you bypass those?
Can I be honest? I really don't care. Like, and I don't really receive negative feedback. Never. Like, I really don't. I don't receive negative feedback in the way that I think most girls are exposed to, because what you put out in the world is what you get.
Like, yes.
I feel like I'm taken very seriously.
Very practical.
Yeah, but I feel like also I'm taken very seriously. I don't post, you know, provocative photos. I don't I don't really give anyone any ammo. Like, what are you going to attack? I mean, so when there are little things, comments of like, you're so excessive with your training, like, you're going to hurt yourself. I'm like, cool. My friend rolled her ankle getting out of the car. She hurt herself. That's not excessive, but you know what I mean? Like, it's life. It happens. So I'm a sensation seeker. I know who I am. I have a high I need to achieve. And so if that needs to be fulfilled somehow with my training, then so be it. It makes me happy. It pushes me mentally. It's self-discovery phase for me. So people say stuff like that, I'm like, you're dealing with something on the inside. Go deal with your demons. Like, don't come to me. But I understand it. I understand how people think, so it doesn't affect me at all.
So do you think you think and act differently within this fitness space? Because I know, like, right now fitness is a very big thing. Everybody's got a different opinion. Do you think you're different to everybody else?
From the eyes of everyone else or from my own eyes?
Your own eyes.
I definitely think I'm different. I'm definitely different. I'm different in the sense that I don't capitalize on what the fitness industry can provide me just because it's there and I can do it. Like, I double think everything and I, like, make sure that my decision is beneficial to humanity. I mean, it's not about the income. It's always about the impact for me. Like, every decision, there's a lot of times, I'm not even gonna lie, where I'm given sponsorships or opportunities and I'm like, God damn. But I'm like, you know what? If there's this one girl who looked up to me and I saved her life, and then this changed her perception of me because this brand has a specific type of core values, that's not worth it for me. Because a lot of people online forget how powerful they are. Like, I go to fitness expos because it reminds me how influential I am. Because, like, I ask any fitness influencer, they don't even realize how influential they are. Like, to us, it just becomes such a normal day-to-day. But when you have those people that come up to you and it's like, you saved my life. Like, I was gonna, like, seriously, like, I was in tears. Like, there's people who come up to me who are like, I was suicidal, this and that. I think about them, and it makes those decisions, those unethical decisions, or even though they're not bad, like, I'm just super extra attentive to every decision I make because I don't want to change the perception of others who had hope in life through me, if that makes sense. So, like, I'm like that standing proof that, like, you will always be yourself and you're always going to find happiness and success in that way, because success is just autonomy and being happy with your family.
How do you feel like you're changing their lives? Like, how does somebody look at you? Is it just through your videos? Or I know you've just started a YouTube, you've just started back with YouTube doing your vlogging. Is it through that? Is it through sharing your story? What's it from?
I think it's primarily through Instagram. I don't really share my story online. Like, nobody knows my story. They keep up with my life. They see my struggles. Like, I think a lot of the struggles I've gone through, my following has been there along the journey with all my injuries and all the things that happened in my life. And they're just there and they see me constantly bounce back stronger and stronger and stronger. And people are like, oh my God, you've gone through like 4 different injuries and this is the best shape you've ever been in. You give me so much hope. So I just get my life together.
Okay.
And also, I think the most important one is being different. Like, when I ask people, like, why do you follow me? Like, why do you like me? It's funny. They're like, why you ask me that? I'm like, no, seriously, like, why do you follow me? Like, why did you wait online to come take a picture with me? She's like, you're just so different from everyone else. Like, and I think that that gives them hope to also be happy with who they are, even if they are different.
So in realizing all this, do you see, or do you feel like there's a problem in the fitness industry right now as a whole?
There's a huge problem. And I think that it could be, the problem is not only that people are capitalizing, right? Because fitness is booming and everyone can make a lot of money and this and that, and humanity is going down, money's going up. I think the problem is becoming a deeper one that's gonna like really ruin people down the road emotionally. And it's not in the consumer base, not those who are looking up to the influencers. It's the actual influencers. This is something I personally went through recently. When you get online and you create a cult, you create an identity of what content you're creating for them. And, you know, we grow, we evolve, and other things begin to interest us. But now we have to think, like, is this something that my following wants to see? No, I'm just going to continue to post what they like. right? So, so now you created a box and identity that you cannot step out of. So you're hindering, limiting your growth. And that's just one aspect of it. Not even including the fact that especially women who have to continue to be these strong women online, like who don't show the vulnerability aspects, like you need to show that.
Mm.
And it's like, if it's uncomfortable, I respect that you don't want to share it, but that discomfort is going to make you grow.
Mm.
And it's also going to help another girl.
Mm.
Far more than your positive quotes, right?
Mm.
Positive, positive, positive. Someone feels like, imagine going through your feed, everyone's got positivity and you feel like shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Something must be wrong with me.
Yeah.
Right? But imagine seeing your role model talking about how they've been struggling with something, but they're getting through it and they want to send a note that you're not alone.
Mm.
How much more meaningful would that be?
Mm.
So it's a matter of like, for me in the future, I really hope that I can create some form of course that can educate influencers on being more influential and how to step outside of the shell that they created on social,
mm.
how to become a better leader
mm.
and a better friend, a better human to others, even if it means you're turning off your comfort.
I love that. Yeah. So we're moving towards the end of the podcast. Okay. I want to know a few things. First of all, what's the next step for Evolve? Where is it heading?
Don't take this in a very sarcastic manner, but wherever it heads.
Yeah.
This year, actually the last 6 months have actually shown me that it doesn't really matter how much you plan.
Mm.
Doesn't matter what you think is going to happen. Mm. What's meant to happen will happen. So my direction is that it's going to continue to globally expand and transform lives and
mm.
focus on mental and physical, emotional health.
Mm.
And that's always going to be the core of it. It's just helping people, humanity, restore their health and, you know, help the world restore its humanity and health. That's always going to be it.
And there's a running tour, of course.
Yeah, and the running tour.
And last but not least, what's the one piece of advice that you could give somebody so they could change their life? I end it always with this, and everyone always says, just one? I'm like, just one. If you could only give one piece of advice to somebody.
Okay, I got it.
Mm.
Give. So always give. Like, no matter how little you have, no matter how upset you are, give, because that's the best cure. That's the best way for people to heal. When you start to give people, it's so funny how the world works and how certain things start to work out for you. But the act of just giving alone makes you happy because it's fulfilling physiological needs, right? That sense of belonging where you've now added value to yourself because you've added value in someone else's world. And love. The world runs on love. So if you can keep loving your life through giving, you're going to live a long and happy life. Like, all this materialistic stuff, it means nothing. The end of the day is how you feel,
mm.
how you make others feel,
mm.
and how much love you can put out into the world and how much you give back. That's literally what we all want. We just want to be loved, and to be loved, you have to give love.
The secret to living is giving.
Yes.
I love that. Thank you so much. Oh, I'm going to pop everything. I was going to say, you know, where can we find you? But I'm going to pop everything.
You can find me under a rock.
I like that. I'm going to put everything in the footnotes of this on YouTube, on the podcast. Everyone can go and say hi to you and screenshot this episode, hopefully, and put them in its story and tag you and be just as inspired as I am.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was fun.